Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Parents Tool Talk Radio with your host, Jody Johnston Powell, licensed social worker, certified family life educator, second generation parent educator, and author of the award-winning book, The Parents Tool Shop, the universal blueprint for building a healthy family. For over 25 years, Jody has been training parents and family service professionals nationwide and serving as a parenting expert to the media worldwide. Now, through the Parents Tool Talk radio show and teleseminar series, Jody shares her practical advice and introduces you to other experts who can give you proven effective advice on the issues that matter most to parents. So get ready to be informed, entertained, and enlightened as we join Jody now.
Hello, and welcome to Parents Tool Talk Radio. I'm so glad you've joined us today. I'm Jody Johnston Powell, author of The Parents Tool Shop and your host. And today our topic is teaching values to children and teens. And we're going to discuss how parents can model and teach values to children from all ages, both practical techniques as well as how to model those. Before we dive into our discussion, I always want to let folks know how you can call in with questions. This is a live show. We really encourage and welcome any live questions that you've got so that we can help you apply what we're talking about to your family. So you can either give us a call at 347-205-9654. I'll say that again, 347-205-9654. You press the one key on your telephone keypad, and that lets us know that it puts your hand up to us and lets us know that you've got a question. If you are listening online or you just want to enter your question that way, you can go to the Parents Tool Talk chat room, and my producer, Chris Gooley, will take your question and pass it on. So just go to www.parentstooltalk.com and click the play/chat button that's just underneath today's show title and description. I also want to remind all foster parents to check in at the beginning and the end of the show if you'd like to qualify for continuing education credits. Just call in that same number or use the chat room. And for detailed instructions, you can go to parentstooltalk.com/links and click on the link that says CEUs for foster parents, and it will give you instructions on how to do that. So without any further ado, let me introduce my special guest expert today. With us today is Dr. Harriet Heath, who is a licensed psychologist, the founder and director of the Parent Center at Bryn Mawr College, and she trains parent educators at DePaul University in Chicago. She's also the mother of three and the grandmother of six. Dr. Heath sees parents' deep commitment to do the best they can for their children, and she's concerned that many parents worry that their decisions are wrong or that they lack the skills to parent effectively just due to all those massive amounts of conflicting advice parents receive. Dr. Heath really seeks to help parents feel more confident about the decisions they're making and more confident in their ability to implement those decisions. Through her programs, Dr. Heath helps parents look objectively at the challenges they face and brainstorm multiple ways to deal with those situations. They select which options to implement based on their beliefs and values while taking into consideration the individual feelings and needs of those involved. Her soon-to-be-published manual for parents, tentatively titled Planning, A Key to Mastering the Challenge of Parenting, guides the reader through this process, and she'll be facilitating an online discussion series for parents in the fall. I've known Harriet for many years, and I'm really pleased to be able to support her work in what she's doing by bringing her on the show today. So hello, Harriet, and thanks for being with us.
Hi, Jody, and what a pleasure to be here. It's been a long time that we've known each other, and I really appreciate this opportunity.
Well, you have always been a great supporter of my work and the Parents Tool Shop in your university settings, and I really am grateful for an opportunity to be able to return that kindness because I really admire your work, and I'm really pleased to share it with parents today.
Well, you've got many, many ideas in your book, and I find parents need those skills because they're not passed along from generation to generation in a way that they used to be.
Yeah. So yeah, it's very rarely our first language.
Yes, thank you for all the research you put in to put together your materials.
Well, you are very welcome. Today we're going to be talking about values, and that's your area of expertise, and that's why I called you, because when it comes to this topic, you are the expert to call. So, and I know in my book, because I cover so much, I do cover values, but in a much more limited way than what you've been able to do through your work, and so I'd like to share that with folks today. I know that every parent teaches their children values, whether they do it intentionally or not. They're doing it even if they're not thinking about it.
Exactly.
At the very least, children are probably learning their parents' values from what their parents say and how they behave. But if parents want to intentionally teach their children values, I think between the two of us, we've got a lot that we can help people with who are listening today know what to say and do. So I'm looking forward to diving in. Tell our listeners how parents use their values in raising their children.
Any decision they make, they're using their values. If they respond to a situation, for example, a two-year-old and mom or dad puts out the clothes or asks the child, well, do you want to wear the red pants or the blue pants? You're making a decision right there as to values. A compliant child or a child who's going to think for themselves. Values are in every decision we make. Unfortunately, we tend not to talk about values. And when I wrote my book, nobody was talking about parents' values. And as an aside, everybody who writes about child rearing has values, but they also don't articulate them. So one of the first steps parents need to do is to identify what their values are. How are they making their decisions?
So if their values are just kind of incorporated in every single thing they do, how do you help people identify those values?
Well, I give them a list of values, and I have a couple of lists. One is relatively short. It's value. They're on one page, and another is three or four pages, and I just keep adding adjectives to that second list.
Okay.
But I have the parents go through the lists and circle everything they'd like to see in their child and what they'd like to see not tomorrow but 10 or 15, 20 years from now, asking the question, what kind of world may our children live in and what characteristics, what values are they going to need to live in that world? So we're looking down the road 15, 20 years from now and ask the parents to circle what they want to see in the child in the future. Then go back and select 10 or 15 that are the really primary ones.
Their top 10.
They're really the top 10.
Yeah. I really appreciate, and I think we think a lot alike, and I'm seeing a similarity here, because anyone who's taken my parenting class or even read the book, because I kind of do it in the book, the first thing we want to do is identify what are the long-term outcomes that we want. What are our parenting goals? And what you identify as values, I think I do a similar thing in terms of having parents identify their goals.
Exactly.
So if this is what you want your children to become in the future, what decisions are you going to make today that will move you one step forward or move your child closer to being able to become that kind of person?
Yes, and I use the word values to encourage people to think long term. But once you select them, they become goals.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so don't get hung up on the words.
On the semantics. Yeah,
right.
I think we're both looking at similar things. And
exactly.
This checklist, I will just happen to mention, Chris will tell folks more about it later, that Dr. Heath is offering the short checklist as a resource for everyone listening. So thank you for that. We'll tell people how to get that a little bit later on.
And in using it, fill it out for yourself and have your parenting partner complete it. If you can get your schools to fill it out too, terrific. A lot of disagreements, a lot of arguments come because people have different values. And if you start talking about it, it's amazing how you can resolve some of those conflicts.
That's a really good suggestion. And before you actually get into a conflict in a real-life situation, that I would imagine the checklist helps provide a means of being able to identify those and to discuss those up front.
Exactly.
Good idea for how to use that in a second way. I'm sure there's lots of ways to use that.
There's lots of ways to use it, and they're valuable. Just a couple of days ago, I met a woman in the supermarket, and they were starting to look at colleges for their child in high school. And she said, you know, we got out your values. I worked with that woman when that child was a preschooler.
Wow.
But she'd used the values and went back to it as they started to look at colleges. It's
wow.
Cool.
That is so cool.
And one that you use a lot in your work, Jody.
Yes. Yes. Boy, what an affirmation of how valuable it is to be looking at that even in the early years, and that the topic and that need is still relevant clear into the college years, that was so valuable for her.
It
great really affirmation for you.
It's something that parents can use.
Yeah.
And one of the emphases in my book is that I'm not choosing those values. The parents are choosing them.
Right.
Because one set of parents will have a different set of values than what might be mine.
Right.
But it's important that parents decide
what their own values are.
It also
yeah.
helps you read out, read a lot of the child-rearing literature, because every advisor who's giving out advice on how to rear children has a set of values, which they usually don't articulate. But
mm-hmm.
if the parent can sit back and say, oh, this is the value, that's why I don't like that piece of advice,
mm-hmm.
or that's why I resonate positively. It's
yeah.
a way of sifting through all the stuff that's being thrown at parents today.
Yeah, yeah. And all of the really proven effective, those universal parenting tools that everybody needs to know and use,
mm-hmm.
those can be used by any family of any diversity, of any, you know, really with any values. Most of them, I mean, I would imagine there are some that would not be consistent with that. But for the most part, parents can take those and can really apply them in ways that can incorporate their own values in the way that they use the tools. That's where they bring their values into how they use them.
Well, the skills are what allow them to live by their values.
Yeah.
You can have a value, for instance, of wanting to teach a child how to care. But if you don't have the skills for doing it, you're not going to be able to work towards that value.
Right. And we'll be giving folks some specific techniques and skills to use in the second segment of this. I am curious, once you have parents identify what their values are, how do you help them understand what their values mean?
Next, I have them define what the value means to them, because parents define a value differently. For example, many parents will say they want their child to be happy. Well, what do you mean by being happy? What kind of behaviors you would see in a happy child?
Okay.
Or a person who is 30 and is happy? What are you looking for? Or you want them to be healthy? What are you talking about, mental health or physical health or both? So the first step after identifying your values is to define what they mean to you and what kinds of behavior you expect to see 20 or 30 years if the child is living by that value.
Okay, so kind of using this, you know, the way I was, you know, you call them values, I call them goals. So in a way, in my kind of lingo, this would be, once you've identified the goal, define how you will measure whether or not you've met it.
Exactly.
What is it that you would see?
In educational jargon, it's what are your objectives, and
right.
how to measure those objectives.
Right, to measure
exactly.
the objectives or the goals.
Exactly.
Okay, that makes sense. Okay, and otherwise, yeah, if they don't, it's one thing to identify your value, but if you don't attach a meaning to it, then you won't really know whether or not you're on the right path, whether or not you're working towards that, if you're seeing any signs that, that it, quote, it's working.
Yes, and after you have defined it and what you expect to see long term, then you have to start breaking it down. I think you used the phrase into small steps.
Mm-hmm.
What do you expect to see in a 18-month-old, or what experiences does an 18-month-old need, or a 6-month-old,
right.
and then up along the way?
Okay, good.
For example, if you want your child to be able to be a good problem solver, learning at 18 months or 2 years that there are choices, that there are two ways of doing things.
Mm-hmm.
Again, my red pants or blue pants. And notice I'm not mentioning the party clothes. I'm giving the child choices that I, as a parent, can live with.
Within limits.
Those are the limits.
Right.
But it's, you know, you'll see children who think there's only one way of doing something. Then you can't problem solve. Knowing that you have options, that's an important first step, and it goes back very early.
Yeah.
And then there's steps along the way.
Right. And I know you're gonna illustrate that for us, of taking a value and going through and illustrating that through through the different ages.
Yes. And if a parent has one that they'd like to throw out, they can call in.
Okay, that sounds good. And speaking of that, I do actually see someone on our switchboard who has their hands up. And Chris, if you could unmute, it's caller number 4 on the switchboard, and the last 4 numbers are 1111. This may be an internet caller.
Right, this may be, a Skype call.
It could be.
Yeah. So let's go ahead and bring this person in. So caller with... last 4 of your phone number, 1111. You may be calling on Skype. Do you have a question for us today?
Well, I just wanted to get some clarification on the definition of values. So far, the objectives or the goals, to me, aren't really values. They are, indeed, objectives or goals. What about ethics, morals, the way you treat people, learning how to differentiate between what you see on TV as... truth or non-truth, and how that relates to the way that a kid growing up should learn how to assimilate in society. That's what I was mainly interested in.
Okay. So you'd like a little bit more clear definition on values?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Dr. Heath, can you address that?
Well, you have, the caller in has mentioned some values, how you get along, how you manage the world today, what are your ethics in how you you relate to the world. Defining what your ethics are, it seems to me, would be a place to get to where your values are.
I would think ethics and morals would be the cornerstone of values, period. I think that most kids, when they're born with a streak that lasts forever until trained on how to be selfish. Most kids will reach out for whatever's in front of them, and if they're not taught that, Johnny, that little toy doesn't belong to you, that belongs to your brother, or that belongs to your neighbor's son, and, you know, you can't scream and yell every time you want to, those are the types of values that I think would be important to helping some little creature called the baby actually grew up to be a productive human being.
Absolutely, absolutely. And your value there, from my point of view, is learning how to care for another or learning how to get along with another. And kids do grab toys, and it's a wonderful opportunity to teach them step by step by step how to share and that the other person has needs and desires too. Now, they're not going to get that at the age of 2 years, but they can learn to take turns. And then as they get older, come back to learning more in greater detail what it means to care for another.
Yeah, I guess at 2, maybe not, the kid can learn. But at the age of 5, when they're going to school and they're interacting with other students in the first grade, even prior to that in kindergarten, they have to learn how to get along, and they have to learn how to spot other kids who may not have been taught how to get along and how to either avoid the kid or in some way put up with the kid or not be confused by the situation. How does a parent effectively do this? Because apparently America is very, very deficient in these values nowadays.
And that's exactly what we'll be sharing in the next segment. We've got a good example to we'll walk you right through with the techniques and all the way through the ages. And we're going to be getting to that in about a minute or so. Harriet, would you like to?
Can I just respond?
Yep.
What you're describing is a wonderful situation, and we teach our values, our moral ethics, situation by situation by situation. But the parent has to be there and has to help. But you're bringing up another very crucial issue, and that is how to protect the child who is living by a value in a world that does not necessarily follow that value, and how do we help the child learn to protect him or herself. And that's a whole nother very crucial issue that we have to deal with in the topic we're dealing with today. I'm glad you brought it up.
Yeah.
It's a very important part.
Yeah.
Because otherwise the child is very vulnerable. The child who's learned to care is very vulnerable.
Because apparently parents, I guess those who still have somewhat of a strong nuclear family, they may have the time and the inclination to teach the kids right from wrong. But single parents, maybe because they're too distracted with everyday living, they don't seem to be able to impart
those types
of values.
I have to break in here. There's a person that did a fascinating study. Her name is Galumbo. And she reviewed all the research on different families, whether it was gay, lesbian, single parents, older parents, working parents, parents at home, every kind of constellation she could thought of. And out of every home came strong kids. And out of every home came kids at risk in the research. And it's harder under some situations, you're right. The single parent's carrying a heavy load, especially if that parent is responsible both for the finances, totally finances, and the rearing of the child. But family structure is not the determining factor totally. I had to get that in.
Thank you. Thank you. And we are at a little bit after 20 after. And so, caller, does that answer your questions?
Yeah.
Or raise more of them.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a good start.
Okay, good. I appreciate the clarification of kind of defining what values are and getting into some, because I think what Harry has said is that each one of us is constantly living our values and what we think, what we say, what we do, and we can't help it no matter when we speak for that to be coming through and in the decisions that we make. So just as this caller did, he was able to call in. I'd like to tell everybody else, encourage everyone else to call in. We do have a few callers. But if you want to tell us that you are not only calling in, but you actually have a question, then you will want to hit the one key on your phone pad. Let me give everybody the number again to call. It's 347-205-9654. That's 347-205-9654. Sometimes my brain gets ahead of my mouth. Then hit the one on your phone keypad, and when you're done with your question, you hit the one again, and then it will take your hand down, and we know that you are done with that question. Then if you want to ask a second question, then you can hit the one key again. It'll put your hand up, and that way we know how to, when someone's actually just listening and when somebody actually wants to make a call. So just to do a quick station break here, that this is Parents Tool Talk. I'm your host, Jody Johnston Powell, author of the Parents Tool Shop, and today our topic is teaching values to children and teens, and we're talking with Dr. Harriet Heath, who's a licensed psychologist, founder and director of the Parent Center at Bryn Mawr College, and author of the book, Using Your Values to Raise a Child You Admire as an Adult. And if you would like to get, we've already mentioned one bonus resource that Harriet is offering today, and we'll be telling you more at our second break around 40 after the hour. If you would like to get those free resources, just sign up for the Parents Tool Talk mailing list. In addition to our featured resources, you'll also get information about upcoming shows, tips for how to download the shows to your computer, subscribe to an RSS feed, and more. It's really the best way to get that exclusive information about our future radio shows and access to bonus resources and discounts that we only offer to that particular list. So if you do want to sign up for that mailing list, just go to parentstooltalk.com/links. That's parentstooltalk.com/links. And know that you will get on the Parents Tool Shop mailing list because that's a sublist of it. But we will not share your information or sign you up for anything else without your permission. You're just getting on the main list and a sublist. And one last time, the number to call in for questions, which we welcome, is 347-205-9654, and hit the 1 key on your pad. So let's get back to our expert, Harriet Heath, and our topic today, teaching children and teens values. We've alluded several times to techniques that parents can use to teach values to their children, but it's also very clear that the techniques that parents use are going to depend on the child's development. Obviously, what you know, a 6-month, 18-month versus 18-year-old child can understand, and the techniques we use would be very different. Could you just give us, I mean, there's so many values that I think it'd be difficult to be broad with this. Could you maybe pick one value and walk us through an example of how a parent would teach that value as the child develops?
Sure. I'd be delighted to. And if we could take what the previous caller was asking about, let's take the value of caring. It's a value that's not readily taught in our culture. We relate to people much more through competition and aggression. But caring is also a very important way of relating if we're going to keep the society together and working together. So the first step is, what do I mean by caring? And to be able to care means putting someone else's needs and desires and wishes ahead of your own, putting that person first. It means knowing the person, knowing what their needs are, and then having the skills to carry it out. It used to be the assumption was that if you really wanted to, you could do something. And that doesn't work. I worked in the area of breastfeeding for many years. And many women wanted to breastfeed. But in those days, 30 years ago, the medical field was giving information that was not conducive to establishing lactation. And the women failed. To say they didn't really want to was very unfair to them.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, I've broken down how you go about teaching, recognizing there has to be a wanting to, but you need the knowledge and the skills. And in caring, that means you must want to care, but you also have to have the knowledge about the situation, who the person is, and the skills to carry it out. So that's my definition and sort of breaking down what needs to be done.
Good.
So
and for those of you taking notes, I just want to highlight what she just said. That's the line you want to write down. Because in defining your values, it's what do you desire? You need to have the desire, the knowledge, and the skills. So you could have the desire, but if you don't have the knowledge or skills, then you wouldn't be able to. You might have the knowledge or skills, but if you really don't want to use, you know, if you don't want to get that end result, then you wouldn't be using the skills and knowledge that you have. So we need those three things, desire, knowledge, and skills.
And this is where your work, Jody, is so helpful to parents, your tools, because they are the skills. And
yeah.
I don't know how those skills used to be handed down, but they're certainly not being handed down in our culture today. So the fact that you've taken the time to put them together is wonderful for parents. So let's start looking then, what are the stages? Well, I say we parent situation by situation by situation, and those situations offer opportunities. You put a newly mobile baby down on the floor with another baby, and that mobile baby will go over and start poking and touching. Is that baby aggressive? No. The mobile baby pokes and touches everything that's new. What the baby needs to do is be taught how to touch the other baby. This is how you stroke the hand. What the parent is starting to do is teaching a skill, but also implying this is a different person. Now, the baby's not mm-hmm. going to be able to articulate that.
Right.
But we know in that sensory motor learning period of early childhood, of infancy, they learn by doing. And so they're beginning to learn this child is different. Moving on along a little bit, how do you relate to that other person? Well, 2-year-olds in one truck, you've got conflict, or one doll with 2 children, you've got conflict. How do you deal with that conflict? Well, a discussion about sharing doesn't mean much, because to a 2-year-old, sharing means you got it in your fist. And if it's in the other child's fist, you no longer own it. But children that age can learn to take turns in a very precise, concrete way. So you set the timer. When the timer goes off, the other person gets a turn, and the child learns to go back and forth. They're experiencing that the other child has the same needs, the same interests, that both children have the same needs and interests. They're beginning to develop ideas more through doing than abstract.
That makes a lot of sense, because younger children don't have that cognitive ability.
Absolutely.
So we're really focusing on teaching behaviors until they would get older, and then we could
they would
be able to understand more cognitively.
That the language will build on as they go along. But they're getting the experiences, and it's sort of in their gut. It's in their sensory motor unconscious abilities.
So we're training them in the habit of the behavior, but they don't yet understand why they're doing it, because that's the abstract
thought. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay.
And then, you know, you move along. Conflict within 3- and 4-year-olds. You start talking about how the other child feels, what both children want, and they want to play together. So you've got a value there that you can build on in dealing with that conflict. And notice, I'm talking more about conflict management than I'm talking about caring. Children at this age can't abstract the caring that I defined. Though you will see caring in them, even as young as a 2-year-old, if their best playmate falls, the other one, the one that did not fall, may go get a comfort blanket or a favorite toy of the child that was hurt.
Mm-hmm.
They may as easily bring their own favorite toy, because they know that's what would comfort them, mm-hmm. not being able to make the jump that another toy would be for their playmate. But it's the beginning steps of reaching out to another child.
Mm-hmm.
And I could list all kinds of experiences along the way. What I'm stressing, though, in talking is what parents can do. And helping them resolve conflict by dealing with feelings and encouraging the children to think about how the other child is feeling, you're beginning to build an approach to dealing with other people that the child cannot articulate until maybe 4, 5, 6. Kids vary tremendously on their ability to read other people. So anyhow, in the preschool years, it's by doing, by being guided by the parent and doing, as well as the parent doing the behavior him or herself, so that they see caring.
Right.
They see caring in how the child sees caring and how they're being nurtured.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an experiential learning in those early stages.
Okay.
Then as we move into elementary school, where children are beginning to develop abstract thinking, they can hold concepts in their mind, they can start thinking about caring and going through the steps of it. They also have the language. So that, let me just give one excellent example. If you have a 6- or 7-year-old and you're going to get a pet, you can have a wonderful family discussion. Well, what kind of pet would we like? What are the needs of that pet? Who's going to provide those needs? How are we going to set up our household, whether it's for a fish or a dog or whatever the pet is?
Mm-hmm.
It's a wonderful example, experiential learning that can be talked about and worked through within the family. You talk about family councils, Jody.
Yeah.
Have a family council and talk about, you know, if you have a tiny house, do you want to get a gigantic dog? Do you see the question?
Yeah.
It's a wonderful...
And that incorporates, and we're talking about caring, of thinking about what would make the dog or the pet comfortable.
Exactly.
What would make us comfortable if we have a giant dog in a small house.
That's right. What can we manage? But you're really acting out the caring as I defined it. You're looking at the needs of another, and you're asking, how can we meet them? Do we have the skills? Do we have the finances to do it? And it's also the studying, getting to understand what that particular animal is going to need.
Yeah. And what I'm really hearing, and I hope that everyone listening is picking up on the language that you're using, because we're not hearing lecturing, preaching, telling kids what they should believe, what they should decide, but asking them questions that get them to learn that critical thinking, that get them to do introspection, and at this age they're able to do that more. They are now more able to think about another being, not just other people, but, you know, how might the dog feel if, or how might a fish feel, of being able to put themselves in each other's place, and of walking them, involving them in the decision-making process so that they're also learning how to make decisions and how to think, rather than just being told, lectured and preached at, and then just blindly kind of complying with that and not learning those critical skills.
I'm so glad you did that summary. And this approach can be applied whether it's to the environment or to, as we suggested, a pet or a service project. I'm concerned that in many of our schools where we do service projects, we tell kids, well, go and do this, which is good to do and it's fine. But it's not helping the child figure through as an adult what's needed out there.
Yeah.
Where if we're giving the child these skills to sit back and think about how can I care for whatever the situation is. And you see, parents can model that. They may talk about summer vacation. Doesn't have to be a problem. What do we all want from our summer vacation? And what are the steps we can go through to provide as much as we can for all the family needs?
Yeah.
Same process of caring.
Right. And I like your example of, you know, older children who maybe do service projects. If they're offered either options so that they could research and pick one that they would be most interested in, or even, doing a paper or something of find, you know, one cause that really touches your heart and what would you like to be able to do for that cause.
Exactly.
And then that leading into what they choose for their service project, so that's coming from within rather than being imposed upon them from without, in which case you get, well, I got to do this service project, and yeah, I have to for a grade. And so their attitude, you know, is completely different going into it than, I'm really touched by this, I want to do something to help, and then that experience becomes something that really helps them develop that sense of caring.
And they can ask the question, what is needed to help?
Right. And the answer comes from within them as well as their research, rather than being told.
Right. Well, it comes from their research.
Mm-hmm.
You really need to reach out to whatever it is to figure out what's needed there.
Right.
Yeah. But it is this process.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's important to say it's not an either-or process, competition, care, or caring, or aggression.
Mm-hmm.
But particularly with competition, our society is so competitive. Our kids will be stronger, though, if they have the skills for both.
Right.
To be able to compete when it's appropriate, but to be able to care when that's appropriate.
Mm-hmm. And cooperate.
And cooperate.
And work with others.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, cooperation is a little bit different, and I haven't gone into that than the
caring. Yeah, well, we're kind of focusing on caring.
Yeah,
which is,
they're both important.
It is different.
Yeah, they're both important.
Right.
And their skills our children need.
Mm-hmm.
And you see, for the parent, if that is your if that's your goal, I want my child, when they're 30 years old, to have the skills and the resources that they can care, then you're going to use situations along the way to teach it. You know, you can ask of situations, is there an opportunity here to teach caring?
Yeah. You've done a really an excellent job of taking us all the way from preschool all the way up through, we were talking about junior high, high school kinds of service projects as all of examples of experiences of how parents can teach children the value of caring. I have and this may be a quick question before we go to our break and then we come back for a different segment. After we identify our value and we want to think about ways that we are able to teach it at different stages, do you actually have parents? Say my child is very young and I want to teach them caring. Do you have them, you know, they take the checklist and then we define what we mean by that. Do you actually have parents think at different ages in advance of what are some things I can do, what can I think of right now that I could do throughout my child's life, or do you just get them thinking about it in the early years and then just kind of put it on their radar of being aware that this may come up situation by situation?
Yeah, in my book, Using Your Values, I've given a description of 10 different values that I follow from infancy up through high school age.
Okay.
And give examples of, you know, you can't give all the examples, but what I'm trying
right.
to do is to help parents see the opportunity. Because I want to say two things here. One is using your values changes situations from being problems to being opportunities.
Yeah.
And if you're working and I think that's very important. You bring this
yeah.
up in your writing when you talk about avoiding problems,
mm-hmm.
thinking ahead, so being aware and thinking ahead so that the problem doesn't develop. I think this focusing on where you want to go rather than avoiding what you don't want, which
yes.
is what you're doing, is so important. And if you're using your values, situations become opportunities for teaching.
Mm-hmm.
And the second thing that happens is you don't have to worry so much about about boundaries. Boundaries are there. If you're teaching a child to care, the boundary of not hitting is just automatically there, but it's not the primary focus.
Mm-hmm.
My problem with our emphasis on boundaries, and don't go away and say I'm saying you don't need boundaries. We do need boundaries, but they have sort of become our emphasis in child rearing, rather than thinking, where do we want to go with our kids?
Right. It's like, and you know my book, and every parent's favorite tool out of the book is the don't say don't,
mm-hmm.
which is instead of telling kids what not to do, which is focusing on the boundary, tell them what they can do.
Exactly.
Yeah, or and offer choices within that boundary.
And what you're doing is you're teaching them how to lead their lives.
Right.
Looking at the opportunities that are out there, and where do you want
right.
to go with them?
Yes.
So you're
modeling.
Yeah,
I'm
we haven't talked
ahead.
A lot about modeling, but increasingly our research is showing how much children, very young children, infants, are learning from seeing what's going on around them and from imitating.
Yeah. Yes.
And that's what we're doing by doing it ourselves.
Right. And I'm looking at the clock here. We've only got 15 minutes left, and we have a whole other segment I want to get to. And you mentioned your book, and I want to be able to tell people about it and where to get it and what's in it. So I'm gonna do a real quick station break here. Remind everybody, in case you did join us late, I'm Jody Johnston Powell. This is Parents Tool Talk. Today we're talking with Dr. Harriet Heath on the subject of teaching values to children and teens. And if you do have any questions, you can call in at area code 347-205-9654 and hit the 1 on your phone keypad. And Actually, I will check the switchboard for callers. And Harriet, if you just want to get a sip of water, you've been sharing such wonderful information. Just relax for a second. And I'm going to have Chris tell folks about our featured resources from both of us for this month. You there,
okay,
Chris?
Jody.
Great.
I sure am. Okay. So let's first talk about the resources being offered by our guest, Harriet Heath. First, we have a two-page resource on dialoguing. This two-page document details the differences between arguing and dialoguing and offers some tips on how to recognize shifts in the middle of a conversation. And Harriet is also offering a very simple but very valuable checklist of values. This is a one-page document that can help you clearly identify the values that you would most like your children to possess 20 to 30 years from now. And both of these resources, the description of dialoguing and the checklist of values, are available free to our listeners. We'd also like to tell everyone about Harriet's award-winning book, Using Your Values to Raise a Child You Admire as an Adult, which received the National Parenting Publications Award for the year 2000. In it, Dr. Harriet Heath asks parents to define their values and then deal with their children in a way that illustrates those values. And she also, she also shows how different values can be used to handle specific situations differently and how this will teach children those values. So now just a quick word on Jody's featured resource this month. It's a special four-page excerpt from the Parents Tool Shop book that is packed with information on teaching values. One excerpt uses one value in particular, appreciating diversity, as an example, and takes you through the entire teaching process. The second excerpt provides quick tips on how to share your values without preaching and lecturing. And the third and final excerpt is for parents who are worried that their teens may be abandoning their family values and what you can say and do in that situation. And as always, we have placed links to all of these resources on our website at www.parentstooltalk.com/links. That's www.parentstooltalk.com/links. And that links page is updated and live at this very moment. So if you're listening to the show live, you can go right now and check out all these resources. So now I will hand things back over to you, Jody.
Great. Thank you so much, Chris. Thanks for updating the page. And also, if you would let me know if there's any questions in the chat room. I know you've been monitoring that, but since we were taking a break, just let me know if we have any questions there that we want answered. Now, Harriet, I'm sure a lot of our listeners are, particularly those that follow your and my work, are actively modeling and teaching values to their children and in a conscious, intentional kind of a way. And I find that often their issue around values is that they feel like they are doing a concerted effort to instill values in their children, and often in many other ways. I think a lot of what we've talked about, they would say, yeah, you know, I've been doing that, and now I'm going to be doing it more because I'm aware of it. But then their children are exposed to children who come from families that may have very different values. And I don't mean just let's appreciate diversity kind of difference, like those kids are behaving in a way that I don't want my child to pick up what they're doing. If parents are concerned about the influence that other values around their children may have on their children, what can they do? Can you talk to parents a little bit about concerns that they might have about other people's values or values that their children are exposed to? Chris, can you unmute her?
Yes, I'm sorry about that, Jody. Let's get Harriet unmuted here.
That's okay. We
Harriet,
just
unmute,
you're going to let me talk, huh?
Yes,
yes, we're going to let you talk.
Well, we do that so that, you know, I often call Chris to mute me out.
I just have to.
We let you take an extra long drink. That's what we did.
Right.
Thank you. Yes, and the speaker that called in was bringing up one of the concerns.
Yeah.
And that is a safety issue. And that's a really major one today. If your child is, for instance, learning to be caring with, with friends and there are children picking on the child on the playground, how do you help the child be safe? Now, some of our playgrounds are well supervised, but some of our playgrounds are not. And a child is vulnerable. I know families from very religious homes who believe in the golden rule or in caring for others, who are teaching their children things like some of the martial arts so they can protect themselves. Maybe that's going a little far, but it's a crucial, crucial issue. In other words, another component is that the children come home and say, but so-and-so can do such and such,
mm-hmm.
or a different value. And this is where talking is so important, having time to explore with your child. And this is where the paper on dialoguing,
right,
is explore, well, what are the consequences of that? How would that affect your life? Why do we do this? Helping the child think through. You mentioned the teen years and how we're afraid our children will leave the family values. Particularly in the teen years, it's a time they question everything. They've got the mental power to question, and they need to.
And developmentally, that's important for them to
do. Very important for
parents. Often misinterpret that as rebellion or you know, defiance, or but
and
it's critically important for them to do that developmentally.
Exactly, and the important thing is to keep the conversation going.
Yeah,
and find out where and when that child is open for conversing. I remember quite a while ago in a parent group, we were talking about this, and there was a man who was divorced, and he had his son 2 days a week. And he started giggling, and I finally said, what's up? He said, well, this is why my son likes to cruise at night. And it turned out when they were out in the car in the dark was when this boy would talk with his dad. And the dad hadn't realized until we were talking about that that's what was going on. But he had found the place the child
yeah.
would talk.
Yeah.
And it can be late at night. It can be when they come home from school. It can be any old time. But the important thing is to find that time during those adolescent years.
Yeah. Often parents will say that they intentionally take the long way home because the only time their kids talk to them is when they're in the car.
Exactly.
Or when I often call a parallel conversation, it's like, you know, you're working together next to each other at the kitchen, you know, whatever,
exactly.
making dinner together. It's interesting because, and driving's the same way. There's something about not sitting down, always necessarily face-to-face, looking them straight in the eye and saying, okay, talk to me,
mm-hmm.
but of just casually, you know, and there's something about that parallel where you're there, but you're not pressuring, and it just kind of will flow and will come out.
You are so right.
Yeah.
And for some, it's, as you mentioned, it's busy hands.
Yeah.
Some, it's parallel.
Yeah.
And the important thing is to find when is the time with the child.
Yeah.
And those talking times often start during the elementary years. And the trick for the parent is to keep it going.
Yes.
And that's where my paper on dialoguing is so important, because you're not there for an argument. You're not there to...
Right.
But you're also not there as a wet blanket. You want to get your point of view across. In a way that keeps the conversation going.
Yeah. And for those of you who have read Parents Tool Shop or have are familiar with any of those resources, FACTS Listening, which is that three-step process, focus on feelings, ask a couple questions, examine possible options. This step of it, of what Harriet is talking about, is that ask helpful questions. When you recognize that your child has a thought or a belief, how you ask questions not only invite them to think about it in themselves and express to you, but that you are able to ask questions that get them to consider some of the thoughts, values, or ideas that you have without lecturing, without the preaching of how to use those open-ended questions to have a dialogue. so I really, this is a really valuable resource. I know a lot of you have said, yes, I know I gave some dialogues in the book, but people always seem to want more resources on how do I do that, ask the question instead of lecturing. And this resource that Harriet has is a real good resource for that. And I actually also just asked our producer also, there's an article on our website called How to Get Teens to Talk. And that's another resource that will kind of fit in with what we're talking about here.
In relationship to that also, I think we're not well skilled in asking questions.
Mm-hmm.
Because we don't want to sound like the lawyer with the subject in the witness box.
That's a good point, because we're not talking about grilling kids with questions.
Exactly.
We're talking about open-ended, helpful questions that get them to do some introspection and then share their perception.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And it's a skill I'm still struggling with. I'm working with a colleague who is marvelous at asking good questions.
Mm-hmm.
For example, instead of asking, what's going on here, asking, well, now, what's happening? So it's a change in the tone of voice as
mm-hmm.
well as the words.
Yeah. I tell the story in my book, the way that I got to be good at that. There's a program called Destination Imagination or Odyssey of the Mind. And in a nutshell, it's within the schools, and I did it from the time my daughter was in first grade until she was in sixth. And it's basically children learning problem solving and how to create things. And so they create their own play, their own script, whatever, and they learn how to brainstorm. And as a coach, all you can do is facilitate and guide, but you cannot give them any answer.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have to figure everything out on their own. And if you give them even one idea, they can be disqualified. So that's how I ended up learning. It was like there was a big consequence if I told them any piece of information or gave them any advice or gave them an answer. So I got really good at asking those questions. And when I saw, you know, just to practice it at home so that I'd be better doing it as a coach,
mm-hmm.
and then I saw the benefit that had at home. And
mm-hmm.
so that it can be developed, but it just takes some practice.
It does. It does take practice. And the first step is becoming aware of it.
Yeah.
Becoming aware of how you're asking questions. What is your tone? What's the situation?
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe you tuck out that question, you tuck it in your mind and come back to it on that drive to the trumpet lesson.
Right. Yes.
But you think about it. Which is one of your points that I think is so strong, this idea of stopping before we respond in a situation.
Yeah.
To stop and think, to take a deep breath. If you're into mindfulness training, you know, take that breath in very thoughtfully.
Yeah.
Then you'll word that question more appropriately.
Yeah.
You'll have a better chance of wording it more appropriately.
That's right. Give it. You're responding instead of reacting.
Yeah, and you know, there's something else I want to throw in here. We're throwing out so many ideas.
And I'm just going to say we have about 3 minutes left, and so we are going to need to wrap up.
Okay. Can I just say very quickly?
Yes.
We've thrown out so many ideas. Most of us don't manage to handle the situation right the first time, but our kids are very good in repeating things. So they give us time to learn.
Yes.
And it's a learning process for us as parents, too.
Yes, it is.
I do want to get that in.
Absolutely. And actually, I'm going to give you a chance to give some final comments. So think about if there's anything else that you know, little tidbits like that before we wrap up. We are coming to the end of the show. I'm going to do a real quick recap and give you a chance to think of that. Our guest today has been Harriet Heath, PhD, and we've been talking about teaching values to children and teens. And I do appreciate so much all the insights and all the practical advice that you've given us today. Foster parents, remember to check out from the call. And then remember, everyone, to go check out the resources by going to parentstooltalk.com/links. And feel free, while you're there, you can subscribe to our list or to get this on iTunes. So thanks again, Harriet. Are there any final comments? You got until the music starts.
My pleasure. To be here. Thank you so much for the opportunity. And let me say that our values are like the stars to the sailors of old. They gave direction and got the sailor to land safely.
Values, I love that.
Same. They give us direction in our child rearing to get to where we want to go.
Oh, I love that. What beautiful final comment.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
It's been good to be here.
Oh, it's been wonderful to have you. And it's been wonderful to have all of you listening. Thank you, everyone, for joining us today. I'm Jody Johnston Powell. You can learn more about Parents Tool Shop at parentstoolshop.com. And I do hope you'll join us again next month when our topic will be emotional abuse with special guest expert Sarah Kay Smullins. I also want to give you a special invite Tuesday, March the 23rd at 7 p.m. Eastern Time for Ask Jody Anything. It's my third open Q&A call. It'll start at 7 o'clock Eastern Time, and it's your questions. We cover a lot of great information. Take care and have a great month.